Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Restaurant patrons ecstatic to be able to dine in. By Christopher Hadorn, C-H-A-D-O-R-N at MRT.com. The state crossed a new threshold during the coronavirus pandemic on Friday as Governor George Abbott permitted restaurants to serve patrons for dine-in service at 25% of the listed capacity of the establishment. Would customers feel comfortable dining in, albeit with social distancing guidelines that specified restaurants are required to seat each party at a table 6 feet apart from other tables and seat no more than six to a table? Restaurants had been limited to to-go orders through carryout, curbside, and delivery since March 19th, when Abbott prohibited dining in through executive order. The six-week ban ended Friday, allowing Tall City eateries to host patrons. "My guests are ecstatic about it," Longhorn Steakhouse General Manager Mike Watt said. "We opened to a line of guests Friday. They were just happy to be coming into the restaurant. Some of them have been here since opening. It's 3 hours in, and they're still here. They're just enjoying being out of their house and mingling with their regular guests and the regular bartenders and so forth. We have a special bond with our team and our guests. They're just happy to be out." Murray's Deli, a popular locally owned eatery, was known for regularly having a sizable dine-in crowd before March 19th order. Murray's Deli General Manager T.J. Tidwell said that during the past 6 weeks, their curbside orders were immensely popular, with 15 to 20 cars waiting in the parking lot. Tidwell said a good portion of their business was still coming through curbside at about 3:30 p.m. Friday. "We knew that a lot of people probably weren't quite ready to go out and eat yet," Tidwell said. "We've probably had around 30 to 35 customers that came in and ate Friday by mid-afternoon. But we're still keeping our curbside, which was crazy busy like always. So I think Midland as a whole is not quite ready to go out and eat just yet. They still are practicing the habits of staying out and doing to-go orders. It was nice to see some people come in and visit with us for a little bit Friday." Many eateries are taking special measures to make sure their patrons feel comfortable and safe within their premises. Clear Springs Cafe operated an outdoor hostess stand on Friday. Murray's Deli and Monterey Cantina Mexicana required patrons to clean their hands with provided hand sanitizer when they entered the premises. Osaka, a Japanese steakhouse, was passing out plastic utensils and paper napkins wrapped in plastic packaging. Disposable menus were provided to guests at several eateries, and Murray's Deli shelved its condiment stand, where it is also used to provide drink cups, straws, lids, and silverware to customers. All items are now provided by restaurant staff. "We have a person that's on staff right now that's doing nothing but wiping tables and cleaning walls every 20 minutes in the restaurant, like touch points for guests," Watt said. "They're going through with three different kinds of sanitizers. We're making sure that it's ready. Employees are wearing the mask to help keep cross-contaminations down." Olive Garden, Clear Springs Cafe, and Ray's Italian Bistro were also requiring employees to wear face masks. Watts said that Longhorn Steakhouse is seating only two parties for every eight tables to adhere to social distancing guidelines. Meanwhile, Murray's Deli placed green tape in the shape of an X on tables that cannot be used, so its dine-in customers would spread out. Restaurants also have prohibited congregating in the lobbies, so parties waiting on tables are encouraged to leave the indoor facility and receive a text or phone call when their table is ready. "We are able to seat about 75 or so guests in the building, which is wonderful," Olive Garden manager Spencer Adams said. "We are just making sure we are keeping tallies on who is coming in. We have our team and our managers coming out here, working with the guests out here, making sure they're not staying inside the lobby. making sure that social distancing is becoming a vital part of the policy and procedure until we are told that we don't have to do that anymore. But really, the biggest thing is we are taking those extra steps to make sure we are being safe, but still being accommodating to the guests so they can come in and eat. I hate to use the term, but it's the first day of freedom for them. They get to come out and actually get to enjoy the place they've been haven't been able to go to for 6 or 7 weeks. Olive Garden disclosed that about 20% of its employee staff was working Friday, while Longhorn Steakhouse was operating with about 30% of its staff. Murray's Deli estimated that about 95% of its workforce would be back by Monday. "Most of my employees are more than happy to come back," Watts said. "I have a few of them that are still waiting on daycare to open up. I have a few of them that are choosing to wait a little longer to see how this plays out. And we're just working with them, being as flexible as we can."
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 3rd, 2020. Front page. Leading the Fight. From City Boy to Country Doctor by Bob Campbell. B-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. For a man in such a complex profession, Dr. Timothy Benton's origins and purposes are relatively simple. The son of a Baptist minister who worked his way through seminary as a parking lot attendant, Benton was inspired to become a doctor by his pediatrician, and his goal then was, and still is in a sense, to ride from call to call in a horse and buggy on the prairie. His career has elevated him to a level far above Doc Adams on Gunsmoke, but he lives in a rural area, keeps horses, and sends surrogates to patients in Andrews, Kermit, Fort Stockton, Alpine, and Sweetwater, and he plans clinics in Pecos and Hobbs in Carlsbad, New Mexico. Benton practices family medicine here and in Midland, and is the Associate Dean for and Professor of Clinical Affairs at the Texas Tech Health Sciences Center Medical School. He and his wife, Nicole, have a daughter. "I grew up in the inner city of Oak Cliff in Dallas and was 9 or 10 when I told my dad I wanted to be a doctor," said Benton, 53. "I looked up to my pediatrician, Dr. William B. Dean. He was a neat man. He had had polio and had a limp, and a distinctive, caring personality. He was a leader, somebody you would trust." Benton took a biology degree at Dallas Baptist University while working as a plumber and warehouseman and doing catheter reviews at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. He graduated from the Tech Med School in Lubbock and did his residency at the University of Texas Health Sciences Center in Tyler. His parents are Jim and Yvonne, and he has a brother. There are no other medical people in his family. Benton worked for 6 years for Covenant Health Systems in Plainview, then opened a clinic in Amarillo adjacent to the Tech Health Sciences Center there, which turned out very felicitously as he became friends with the family medicine chairman, Dr. Rodney Young. Rodney said, "Why don't you join the faculty?" he said. "You'd be good at this." Dr. Stephen Burke, dean of the School of Medicine in Lubbock, called me on the golf course one day and said, "I want you to go to Odessa and be chairman of family medicine there. When you get involved with the community, you'll be fine." Benton was the director of residents, or doctors who have graduated and are completing training in their specialties, in Amarillo from 2008 to 2012, and here from 2012 to 2018. He has chaired the Family and Community Medicine Department here since 2012. He has taken a lead role with Ector County officials and the County Health Department to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic, noting, "In a disaster like this, you really need the community. We saw it with the mass shooting. That was a horrible event on one day. Now we're dealing with a potentially horrible event that is months long. And again, it's reinforcing how we need to come together as a community. It takes multiple resources, and we have to support one another. Political leaders, healthcare folks, and people from varying backgrounds. It takes all of us to fight this battle. It has shown me that it's vitally important to communicate and have common goals and a unity of vision. Benton's low-cost clinics are at 701 West 5th Street here and 301 North Avenue Inn in Midland, and he has pioneered a VIP pass program for ECISD students to get prompt attention. He also has an executive medicine program in which wealthy people get thorough examinations in a short period of time. Serving people was modeled in my home, and I saw that as a purpose for me, he said. We lived a simple life and were always welcoming. My goal is to serve people from any background and meet them where they are. Benton said the telemedicine options that are being offered during the pandemic will be continued after it abates, including the rural clinics, VIP passes, services to the state prison at Fort Stockton, and psychiatry and endocrinology practices. We had already been thinking along those lines, and I think that will be the game of the future, he said. The pandemic has forced us to work through some of the kinks of it. Odessan Sandra Oaf said Benton is a salt-of-the-earth kind of guy who truly embodies the West Texas spirit. He has been our physician for several years, and we are impressed with him, Oaf said. He is always trying to improve access to health care in the Permian Basin, and we're lucky to have him here. Midland oil man Arlen Edgar said the Bentons are fellow parishioners at Grace Lutheran Church in Midland. The family has hosted horse riding outings for the church's youth, Edgar said. Dr. Benton has a warm and friendly personality, and he has the ability to discuss medical matters with laypersons without talking down to them. Edgar reported acting as a go-between for Benton to get his backing for his rural health initiatives from the Permian Strategic Partnership and another Midland foundation. He has a folksy, rural-oriented approach that many doctors do not have, probably due to his graduation from the Texas Tech Medical School, his choice of country living, and an empathy for residents in rural areas who may have limited access to medical treatment, Edgar said. The Bentons relax by riding and taking care of their horses and two others that they are boarding. I have always been an outdoor guy, fishing and hunting, he said. My horses are friends who are always willing to serve. A horse is 1,200 pounds of muscle, and there is no way I have the power to tell that horse what to do. But because we develop a partnership, he has the willingness to do what I ask. 2015 cut called Mistake by Bob Campbell, CAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Ector County Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton, Precinct 3 Commissioner-elect Don Stringer, and former City Councilman Mike Gardner, Shelton's July 14th Republican primary runoff opponent, gave mixed reviews to the county's performance during the COVID-19 crisis. Shelton gave the county an A, but said officials should have done a better job of communicating with the public to quell fears, while Gardner said he didn't like to play armchair quarterback. But looking back, the court made a big mistake by eliminating its emergency management department in 2015. Stringer was supportive, saying officials were under great pressure and did the best they possibly could. Without standing in their shoes and knowing a lot of the things they knew, I reserve the right to be real critical of what they've done, Gardner said Thursday. I will say that we have some work to do. It was not a good decision to get rid of the emergency management department to save $100,000. He referred to the commissioner's 3-2 vote on August 31st almost 5 years ago to terminate the department as a cost-saving move, leaving Ector as the Permian Basin's only county without an emergency management department. This is a critical position, then County Judge Susan Redford contended before the vote. The duties require that you work with all the local law enforcement and first responders, work with Commissioner's Court, and report directly to the county judge, and that you make sure this community is prepared in case of a disaster. Shelton and Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez voted with Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons, who made the motion, against Redford and Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers that day. Faulting the county primarily for its failure to keep the public informed, Gardner said officials ended up imitating the city of Odessa's often halting or non-existent release of public information. Ever since we had the active shooter tragedy in August, the city wants to filter everything they give out through reverse osmosis, he said. This was a hot potato that everybody took turns throwing to one another when what we needed was a point person. Fear is a terrible thing, and information keeps that from happening. I'm confident that the leaders are doing all they can for the most part, but we need to keep the fear down as much as possible. There are a lot of scared people out there, and you can't blame them because this is a scary deal. Crediting the county for protecting the public, Shelton said, some areas were really good and some weren't so good. The health department did a good job of contact tracing and organizing and allocating resources to map and locate potential areas, he said. When they find an incident, they search it and find out who might be affected. They were working hard to create a safe atmosphere for the community. We need to do a better job of communications with the media and public because of the fear factor. Never before had we been told to stay home and not go outside. Shelton would not comment on the court's elimination of the emergency management department, which is voted to do. Stringer said the county had done the best job possible. This thing has taken the world by surprise, and I think everyone is doing the absolute best they can. Shelton ended up calling himself the county public information officer during daily news briefings. Those briefings were never led by the county's health department, but instead by Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center. Health Department Director Brandy Garcia attended some of the early calls, but following a dust-up with local media, apparently refuses to join the Zoom meeting. Debbie Hayes never attended the calls, and Childers did until quitting following the same dust-up. Shelton then started attending, but quit after an editorial in the Odessa American criticized the county's lack of transparency during the crisis, but then started attending again. The media could have worked a little better with our health department. If you had been more user-friendly, you could have been nice, Shelton said. Gardner said the county should start preparing now for the next emergency, whatever it might be. I want to see us get to the point where we know how to handle emergencies and are not just looking at one another with nobody wanting to jump out and take the bull by the horns, he said. Maybe we need to look at other counties. Some of them handled things pretty well. We got more information out of Midland. It seemed like they had a pretty smooth go of it. I'm afraid we live in a world where more and more things like this will be happening. Top to bottom, we need to learn from it and prepare ourselves, Gardner said. Referring to Odessa Chief of Police Mike Gerke and Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths, Gardner said, the police chief and sheriff may be the finest that the city and county have ever had. And we have great people in the fire department. We need to rely on these guys and put their expertise to work. We need drills to practice, and we need a point person to be that spokesman. This is a good learning experience that we should take to heart and learn from. The big sin here would be not to learn from this and make it better. Shelton said the county's Emergency Operations Center at the Southside Senior Center was a collaboration to get everything together and figure out how to make all this work. It was put together to draw resources and have them available for all the entities, he said. Now that we have the resources in place, we don't need the EOC. Noting that the center was County Judge Debbie Hayes' responsibility, Shelton said a key part of the resources was manpower to do contact tracing. Stringer said one reason the EOC didn't live up to its opening fanfare was that the COVID-19 crisis turned out to be not as bad as was first expected. I spoke to a gentleman working over there who said the reason for their opening it in the first place was the fear that this thing was really going to explode, he said. That never happened. We're fortunate that there were not that many cases, and therefore keeping it open would have been frivolous. I don't know how busy the commissioners were. I'm sure that a lot of tasks needed to be covered, and they did the best they could with the tools they had. 2020 appraisals average 4.5% increase by Anita Campbell, chief appraiser. Appraisal notices have been delivered for most real estate. Notices for business personal property, industrial property, and agricultural use property will be mailed in the next few weeks. All property owners should receive notices by the end of May. If you have not received a notice for each of your properties by June 1st, you should call our office at 432-332-6834 or email us at hector@hectorcad.org. Texas law requires the appraisal district to discover, list, and appraise all taxable property within Hector County. We are required to notify the taxpayer of our opinion of market value or the price you could expect to receive for the sale of your property. State law also mandates that appraisals be based on market conditions as of January 1st. Market information on January 1st, 2020 reflected an average increase of 4.5% in the value of single-family properties, from $192,766 to $201,440. The average market value of new homes also increased slightly, even as the number of new home completions decreased from 1,438 in 2018 to 1,117 in 2019. The timing could not be worse. Amid a serious economic downturn further complicated by the COVID-19 pandemic social distancing guidelines, homeowners will receive a notice of appraised value with an increase in their market value based on a healthy economy and a strong housing market leading up to January 1st. And while there is a tax code provision allowing temporary tax exemptions for qualified property damaged by a disaster, the Attorney General's office summarizes that this exemption applies only to physical damage and any economic damage caused by COVID-19 does not apply. ECAD normally meets with 2,500 to 5,000 property owners during the protest period, exchanging information regarding square footage, physical condition, quality of construction, recent sales for comparable properties, and income and expense information for commercial properties. Often in these meetings, property owners and appraisal district staff can agree to a property value without the need for a formal protest. With offices closed to the public, it is likely phone lines will be busy and our voicemail will be full. To ensure you meet the protest deadline, you can mail your written protest form to 1301 East 8th Street or visit our website at www.hectorcad.org and file your online protest. Make sure you provide a phone number and email address. Our appraisal staff will attempt to contact you in an effort to reach a settlement. So please provide as much information as you can to support your opinion of value. We must also inform you of the amounts deducted from your market value for qualified exemptions for each taxing entity, the estimated tax amounts, and your rights as a taxpayer. You, as the taxpayer, have the right to protest any of the information on your notice. To protect that right, please check your notice carefully. Verify the ownership and mailing address information. If the property is your principal residence, make sure you are receiving the exemptions to which you are entitled. If the property is used for agricultural purposes and you have filed for special appraisal, verify the market and agricultural values of your land. We appraise about 90,000 real estate and business personal property accounts and 142,000 mineral properties each year, and we understand the potential for inaccuracies. Our job is to maintain ownership records, administer exemptions, and determine market value, and we do a better job with your input. So please check your notice carefully to ensure the accuracy of your assessment. Errors discovered now can be corrected, but failure to timely protest could be time-consuming and costly when you receive your tax statement. The goal of the ECAD staff is to be accurate and helpful in each step of the ad valorem process. This year is no exception. The Chief's Appraisal, Anita Campbell. Campbell is the Chief Appraiser for the Ector County Appraisal District. Her column on tax issues appears on the first Sunday of each month.
Change in water chemicals. The city will temporarily change the method used to disinfect the water supply June 1st. Residents may notice a bleach or chlorine-like smell in the water, but it is nothing to be concerned about. During this interim period of about 30 days, the city will use only chlorine to disinfect the water supply instead of the combination of chlorine and ammonia to form chloramines. The change in disinfection will be implemented as a proactive maintenance activity in our distribution system to assist in maintaining adequate chlorine residuals. The city has made this same change to its disinfectant in past years with minimal impact to its customers. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, has been notified of the change in the treatment of the water and concurs that it is the best method of ensuring that adequate chlorine residuals are maintained throughout the distribution system. For more information, please call Thomas Kerr, Director of Utilities, at 432-335-4634. Parade of Support. Harmony Science Academy, Odessa, 2755 North Grandview, has scheduled appreciation parades from 6 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, K through 2nd grades, Wednesday, 3rd through 5th grades, and Thursday, 6th through 8th grades. Visit tinyurl.com/YBPRDPHA. For more information.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, May 4th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Foundations Come Through for MMH Project, by Stuart Doreen. The current coronavirus pandemic forced a discussion at Midland Health about what would be best for facilities moving forward. During Thursday's Midland County Hospital District Board meeting, the solution to accommodate and cohort additional critical care unit patients was determined to be one of those priorities. The board approved a plan to modify the design of the ninth floor to a universal care setting and equipping the floor with critical care equipment. That will allow the hospital to exceed its current space of 48 rooms. Midland County residents also found out that the Scarborough Foundation funded $5.812 million to be used for the design changes, a construction acceleration, and additional critical care equipment. This is another example of Midland philanthropic entities coming through for Midland's healthcare community, and more specifically, the Ninth Floor Project. The FMH Foundation originally provided $18 million for that project. Just as FMH Foundation provided funding for the original build-out on the ninth floor, the Scarborough Foundation came through to help fund the wish list slash requirements to take care of priorities that came out of discussions brought forth by the coronavirus pandemic. The ninth floor originally had been designed as a medical surgical floor that would accommodate either same-day surgery or medical surgical inpatients, hospital district documents stated. In anticipation of our current pandemic and future critical needs, changing the design to a universal care setting provides the ability to use the space for any level of acuity, including critical care unit, ICU. Should the COVID pandemic situation change and the need increase for more critical care space, the ninth floor design changes would alleviate any concerns of caring for the additional critical patients. Hospital district documents show the contractual completion date for the Level 9 project was scheduled for November 6th, but with the new accelerated schedule, Layton Construction anticipated a completion date of September 18th. The cost of a quicker completed project is $1.504 million. Our long-term plan continues to assume use of the ninth floor for day surgery and outpatient treatment, with the transition to medical surgical beds whenever the master facilities plan is executed and new outpatient space is built, according to hospital district documents. The total cost of the design and construction changes equate to $838,571. A breakdown of other costs include $1.44 million for CCU beds, $1.125 million for 48 physio monitors, $904,536 for 24 ventilators. This article is entitled, 79705 is tops for most unemployment claims, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland County zip code that covers much of Northeast Midland had the most unemployment insurance claimants between March 18th and April 18th, according to the Texas Workforce Commission. The TWC reported last week that 79705 topped 79707, which includes Northwest Midland, 1,493 to 1,209. Across the entire county, there was a unemployment claimant count of 5,908. The top five unemployment claim industries were support activities for oil and gas operations, full-service restaurants, dentist's office, hotels and motels, and department stores. Across the state, the top five unemployment insurance claims by industry were full-service restaurants, 120,216, dentist's office, 41,811, hotels and motels, 37,141, limited service restaurants, 27,129, and department stores, 26,000. When it came to zip codes in Midland County, 79705 and 79707 were first and second. Rounding out the rest were 79706, 79701, and 79703. The most claimants from a zip code in Ector County, 1,590, came from 79762 zip code, which represents much of central Odessa. The most claimants from any one zip code in the state during the period was 6,604 from 77449 in Katy. This article is entitled RIDIC, Hybrid Approach to Provide Learning Opportunity, by Stuart Doreen. Doubling down on previous comments about Midland ISD entering the 21st century with its virtual learning during the coronavirus pandemic, Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said Thursday his team is looking at what classrooms will look like, including at the elementary level. Responding to a question during the Midland Unified Command Team press conference about remote learning as an option for students in future years, Riddick reiterated that Midland ISD can't put on a shelf what it's learned about the 21st century platform. He again said that students have been here for a very long time and we are finally being forced to catch up, an unintended consequence of the pandemic. He used elementary school learning as the example, stating the district needed an alternate plan for the 22 kids in a class concept. He said even in that traditional environment, there are kids who are ready and able to thrive in a more virtual online setting. Do we keep that environment for kids who are able to keep pace that way, Riddick said? Do we have a hybrid where kids come into the classroom and they do a virtual learning at home? And there's a combination of the two. And we have one where a kid or a student comes every day to the classroom. We're going to have some model of that going forward. And those are the things that we need to think about holding on to keep the spirit of what this learning looks like for 21st century students who are thriving in it. This article is entitled, City Reports Eighth Coronavirus-Related Death. Health Department Conducting Investigation on Five New Cases. From Staff Reports. Midland County, Midland Memorial Hospital, and the City of Midland on Sunday confirmed Midland County's eighth COVID-19-related death. The patient, a male in his 70s, died Saturday at Midland Memorial Hospital. He was a resident at Midland Medical Lodge. No other details will be released at the request of the patient's family. He is the sixth resident of the Medical Lodge to die from the virus, according to the information provided by the city. The coronavirus case count for Midland County was up to 89 Sunday night when the city spokeswoman said the Midland Health Department was conducting its investigation on five new confirmed cases. The 85th case is a female in her 80s who was tested by Midland Health. She is a resident at Midland Medical Lodge and is an inpatient at Midland Memorial Hospital. The source of exposure is contact to known case. The 86th confirmed case is a male in his 30s who was tested by Midland Health. He is self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is contact to known case. The 87th case is a female in her 80s who was tested by Midland Medical Center Hospital. She is a resident at Midland Medical Lodge and is in their isolation wing. The source of exposure is contact to known case. The 88th confirmed case is a female in her 80s who was tested by Medical Center Hospital. She is a resident at Midland Medical Lodge and is in their isolation wing. The source of exposure is contact to a known case. The 89th confirmed case is a female in her 90s who was tested by Midland Health. She is a resident at Midland Medical Lodge and is in their isolation wing. The source of exposure is contact to known case. Of the 89 confirmed cases of coronavirus in Midland County, 49 were related to the medical lodge, 32 residents, one former resident, and 16 staff members. This article is entitled, Hospital District Agrees to Deal with New Roofer. Midland County Hospital District terminates previous contractor after several performance issues by Stuart Doreen. Remember that fire in August on the roof at Midland Memorial Hospital? It happened during a roof repair by a Lubbock company, J. Ferg. After the fire and, quote, several major performance issues, unquote, Midland Health terminated the contractor, hospital district officials reported Thursday. The Midland County Hospital District Board approved the new contract Thursday during its meeting to perform repairs on multiple roofs at Main and Ohio Street campuses and the DX Lab building, according to hospital district documents. The board agreed to a deal with Advanced Roofing out of the Metroplex. The original job was for $853,023.72. According to hospital district documents, Factoring in the portion of the work already completed and the bid cost from the second bid, $474,000, the new requested project budget will be $1.037 million. This is a net addition to the budget of $184,278.75. Board members asked if there was any money to be paid by Jay Ferg, the original contractor. Hospital officials said that remains to be seen, and if money is paid back, if the amount will cover the addition to the budget. Because of the fire in August, the main tower had to be cleared out, plus hospital lost revenue from cancelled procedures. This article is entitled, FMH Provides Grant for Pediatrics Facility, Clinic to be at MMH West Campus, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland Community Healthcare Services Pediatric Clinic appears headed to the Midland Memorial West Campus. The hospital, Midland County Hospital District Board on Thursday approved spending $500,000 with an $84,000 contingency that will allow for the construction of space on the third floor at West Campus. Construction funding has been provided by FMH Foundation, which according to hospital district documents, will also provide funding directly to MCHS for equipment and other move-related costs. The former Continue Care Hospital space on the third floor has been vacant for the past 2 years and will be repurposed to combine Premier Physicians Pediatric Clinic with the Midland Community Healthcare Services Pediatrics Unit, according to the district. Following this merger, Premier will no longer operate a pediatric clinic, the report states. Midland Health's internal projects construction team will handle construction. The district report states that the performing this work in-house provides several advantages, including cost reductions and immediate control and oversight of the project as a whole. Furthermore, this will ensure any renovations and changes being performed in the space can easily be retrofitted back into functional hospital rooms should the need arise for the current pandemic response, emergency overflow, or other unforeseen circumstances, the report states. Midland Health CEO Russell Meyer said last week that the demand for pediatrics in Midland is great, and this move will be a benefit for the Midland County Health System. Hospital board members learned the project should be completed before July 31st.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, May 4th. CASA remains dedicated. This story was written by Sam Waller. May is Foster Care Awareness Month, and CASA of the Permian Basin is taking the opportunity to promote the welfare of children and families involved in the foster care system and raise awareness of the need for more people to help. In January, Ector County had 210 children in foster care and less than 40 active advocates. Lynn White Giesler, Executive Director of CASA of the Permian Basin, said meeting those needs during the coronavirus pandemic has become that much more difficult. Quote, "With everything our world is facing right now, it might be easy to forget about these children and families and what they're going through," White Giesler said in a press release. "But they need support from their community now more than ever." CASA, which stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates, trains volunteers who are then appointed by judges to advocate for a child or sibling group while they're in the foster care system, whether that be in court, school, or other settings. Volunteers also get to know everyone involved in the child's life, including their parents, foster parents, teachers, doctors, family members, and others. Quote, "Foster care awareness is so important because we have such a lack of foster care homes in Odessa and Midland," said Casey Hallmark Williams, CASA of the Permian Basin's volunteer coordinator. Continuing the quote, "I would say about 60% of kids that are moved from their parents in this area get placed outside of the county. That means that not only are they getting taken away from their home, they're now being taken away from everything that they're familiar with, their church, their friends, their school, and getting moved to a completely different town. If we can raise awareness of fostering and the aims of CASA at the same time, that's our goal. End quote. CASA of the Permian Basin serves a 5-county area, Ector, Crane, Ward, Winkler, and Loving. Those wanting to help may volunteer, nominate others who they believe would be good advocates, or donate by visiting CASA of the Permian Basin's website, www.casapba.org. While social distancing has made advocacy more difficult in recent months, Hallmark Williams said CASA of the Permian Basin remains dedicated to its mission. Quote, "We've moved from going and visiting with the children to doing FaceTime," she said. "We're still very involved, still able to monitor their school and make sure they're getting all the schoolwork they need to be doing, that they're doing it at home. We're still in constant contact with CPS and the attorneys. Really, the only thing that has affected is doing our face-to-face interviews. We've been able to do online training for the new volunteers, which has been really awesome. They can go it from their living room. That's been really beneficial as well," end quote. According to its news release, CASA of the Permian Basin is making the safety of their CASA volunteers and the children and families they serve its number one priority through the duration of the crisis. Volunteer information sessions, interviews, and pre-service trainings have moved entirely online. Reopening as safely as possible. This was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. In the week after the August shooting, I was in a community meeting where several people from Homeland Security were talking with community members about a recovery plan. One comment the Homeland Security person said will stick with me for the rest of my life. Quote, "You will get back to normal, but it won't be the same normal." End quote. I thought about that statement a great deal over the past several weeks with COVID-19. We will get back to normal, but it will never be the same. On April 27th, Governor Abbott started Texas down the path of getting back to normal. That path, however, is not a simple or even straightforward one. There is one thing that is absolutely crucial for people to remember as we try to return to normal. While the curve has flattened for Texas as a whole, and the number of new COVID-19 cases across the state has been declining, we still need to be very careful about limiting the potential for exposure to coronavirus. Social distancing models showing how that slows the progression of COVID-19 and how to flatten the curve, developed by the University of Texas, have been accurate in other parts of the state, which is great, but for us, it does add some complications to reopening. Our peak has been predicted to hit in late May to June, still quite a way off. Because we do want to continue with the flat curve, continue progression towards normal, and not see a high peak here in Odessa, we need to be particularly diligent about how we act as individuals as we go out into public. In Texans Helping Texans, the governor's report to Open Texas, Governor Abbott and his team of medical experts recommends that Texans continue to remain home as much as they can during our reopening. When you go out and about, wash your hands frequently for at least 20 seconds with soap and water or hand sanitizer. I get asked quite a bit about glove use. Gloves are great protection when they are worn correctly. The problem is, most people do not wear gloves correctly. If a person puts on a pair of gloves at the house, goes into their car, goes into a store, and back into their car, then goes into another store or their workplace, and then removes their gloves, they have likely touched multiple surfaces, likely touched their clothes and their face, and it's very unlikely they washed their gloves. Gloves give people a false sense of security. It is far better to have bare hands and wash them between every stop than to wear a pair of gloves in multiple places. Hospitals and healthcare organizations go through tens of thousands of pairs of gloves a day because staff changes gloves between every interaction and wash their hands between changes. Please save gloves and other PPE for healthcare workers and wash your hands. Try to stay at least 6 feet away from other people as much as possible. Cover coughs and sneezes with a tissue and then throw the tissue away. Do not put it in your purse or pocket where you might touch it later. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. The other thing I get asked about quite a bit is masks. A simple cloth mask has been proven to decrease the spread of coronavirus in other parts of the world. Wearing a mask in public really goes against our culture in many ways, but it is a good way to protect yourself and others. It does that by limiting how droplets can spread, and it also creates a barrier to help keep you from touching your face and making you more conscious about touching your face. I highly recommend wearing a mask in public. I wear a fabric mask when I go out and make my family do the same. Finally, regularly disinfect with household cleaners, frequently touch surfaces in your home and work environments, countertops, doorknobs, light switches, car door handles, gear shifts, and steering wheels. Do not forget about remote controls, computer mice, and keyboards and phones. Finally, avoid contact with people who are sick, and if you are sick, stay home and contact your primary health care provider. I look forward to seeing people out in the community again. I just want to see us all out there safely, using social distancing and good hand washing. We can beat this virus. The people in West Texas can beat anything. We will get back to normal, even though it is not the same normal. COVID-19 News by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 78. Ector County negative, 1,118 out of 1,300 tested with 104 pending. 4 deaths. Midland County, 82 confirmed cases out of 1,678 tested. 6 deaths. Texas, 31,548 confirmed cases with 390,560 tested. Total Texas deaths, 867. U.S. cases, 1,122,486 total confirmed cases and 65,735 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site. MCH Benefit. The Kendra Scott of Midland will be donating a portion of their sales to Medical Center Health System for COVID-19 relief through May 10th. 100% of all proceeds from the State of Texas Charm and 20% of all proceeds from Midland curbside and in-store appointment purchases will benefit MCHS. In addition, as a special thank you during Nurses Week, nurses will receive a 20% discount if they shop between May 4th and May 6th. As always, nurses receive a 15% discount year-round. Customers can make their purchases at kendrascott.com, which will then give instructions on how to pick up their items at curbside. The Kendra Scott location in Midland can be found at the Commons at North Park off of Loop 250. Livestream graduations. Graduation ceremonies for Ector County ISD's Class of 2020 will be virtual this year, but they will contain some of the same elements students would have experienced in a face-to-face event. Dates for the graduations are May 22nd and May 23rd, and they will be broadcast at the same time they would actually have been held, Superintendent Scott Murray said. Permian High School is on May 22nd, and Odessa High School is May 23rd. The graduations would be live if not for coronavirus. The graduation for Odessa Collegiate Academy is at 10 a.m. May 22nd, the one for OC Techs at noon May 22nd, George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa at 2 p.m. May 22nd, and Permian High School at 8:30 p.m. May 22nd. Odessa High School's graduation will be at 8:30 p.m. May 23rd.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Monday, May 4, 2020. Local. Sergeant John Murphy, medic with the 2nd 142nd Infantry out of Lubbock, conducts a nasal swab as he and other members of the Texas Military Forces, including the Texas Army National Guard, Texas Air National Guard, and Texas State Guard, conduct coronavirus testing Sunday at the Greenwood Volunteer Fire Department. The testing was free and open to anyone, but appointments had to be made in advance. Diabetes program to be offered virtually. Midland Health's Diabetes Reversal Program is now being offered virtually beginning Thursday. Participants can join from their home, office, once a week for 12 weeks. Each one-hour class is offered by a team of experts, including a physician, dietitian, health coach, and exercise and stress management expert. The program is covered by most commercial insurances, including Medicare. The program will continue to be offered on a virtual platform as long as there is interest. To learn more about this program, call the Lifestyle Medicine Center at 221-LIFE. Mall hours modified. For the time being, Midland Park Mall hours have been reduced 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and noon to 6 p.m. Sunday. Grocery store hours during coronavirus. Albertsons Market, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 1002 Andrews Highway. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday, 3317 North Midland Drive. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. HEB, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., customers 60+, orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. Groceries will be delivered by Favor Delivery. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. For shoppers, 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. 7 to 8 a.m. curbside delivery pickup for first responders and customers 60+, with disabilities or at risk. Junior League distributes hygiene kits. The Junior League of Midland is continuing its Pink Pantry program during coronavirus by delivering hygiene kits to the Midland ISD distribution sites, according to an email from the organization. The kits contain deodorant, shampoo, soap, pads, and tampons. With the Pink Pantry program, boxes of personal hygiene and feminine hygiene supplies are placed at MISD secondary campuses, which are now closed. To support Pink Pantry with monetary and or product donations, go to www.jlmidland.org, email office at jlmidland.org, or call 682-4732. Today in history. Today is Monday, May 4, the 125th day of 2020. There are 241 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On May 4, 1970, Ohio National Guardsmen opened fire during an anti-war protest at Kent State University, killing four students and wounding nine others. On this date, in 1932, mobster Al Capone, convicted of income tax evasion, entered the federal penitentiary in Atlanta. Capone was later transferred to Alcatraz Island. In 1971, the first group of Freedom Riders left Washington, D.C. to challenge racial segregation on interstate buses and in bus terminals. In 1998, Unabomber Theodore Kaczynski was given 4 life sentences plus 30 years by a federal judge in Sacramento, California, under a plea agreement that spared him the death penalty. In 2006, a federal judge sentenced Zacharias Moussaoui to life in prison for his role in the 9/11 attacks, telling the convicted terrorist, "You will die with a whimper." Today's birthdays. Pulitzer Prize-winning political commentator George Will is 79. Pop singer Peggy Santillia Davison, The Angels, is 76. Country singer Stella Parton is 71. Violinist Susie Tyrell, Bruce Springsteen, and the E Street Band is 63. Country singer Randy Travis is 61. Actress Mary McDonough is 59. Contemporary Christian singer Chris Tomlin is 48. Sports reporter Aaron Andrews is 42. Singer Lance Bass, NSYNC, is 41. Country singer Ray Lynn is 26.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.